You're listening to the Fearless Kitchen Podcast. And now it's time to join your host, Vanessa Baxter.
Good morning and welcome to another episode of the Fearless Kitchen. You may have noticed of late I have been a little remiss on getting my episodes up and running in time, and I apologise hugely for that. I've had a few changes in my life and it's taking me a while to just get myself settled and organised, but bear with me because we will still be bringing these episodes to you, and thanks to my fantastic partners at worldpodcasts.com, they will be up and running, but we may not do them every week. It may be that between now and Christmas we're just going to revert to monthly episodes, and we'll just trickle them through for you guys. And if someone special comes along, then we will pop that one up as well. And then 2018, I'll be back fast and furious as always. But today I've got a really special guest, and I interviewed her while I was recently in Singapore. Her name is Sasha, and we met just for this interview, but we totally couldn't stop talking with each other. She's absolutely fantastic. She is a London girl originally, a food-loving mum of three, and they've located themselves in Singapore and raising their young family there. And she's absolutely passionate about food and the provenance of food and really great quality meats and fish and chicken. And she has started a business called Sasha's Fine Foods. It's a purely online business, but if you are living in Singapore, you have the opportunity to buy the most beautiful produce from all over the world. Really gorgeous, clean food. And she literally gets on a plane and travels all over the world to meet all these extraordinary farmers and fishermen and suppliers of the produce that she then imports into Singapore. And she can tell you pretty much everything about these family-run businesses, smaller businesses who genuinely care about their animals and the environment, and where her supplies are coming from. I think it's fantastic. She has a load of produce, of course, coming out of New Zealand, Alpine River salmon. She has beautiful beef coming from Australia, from all sorts of suppliers. She's got chicken from Jamie Oliver's supplier. Amazing, amazing, amazing woman. And she has really set up quite an extraordinary business in Singapore. So whether you are in Singapore or not, it's really worth checking out her website, www.sashasfinefoods.com. But meantime, stay with me as we interview the lady herself. I'll take what's good. Ooh, 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 ooh. Oh dear, so here I am in Singapore with Sasha, who I've only met online. So it's really exciting to meet you in person.
It's lovely to meet you too. You are such a bundle of joy, I can tell. We're going to have some fun.
I think we are going to have some fun. I can tell you are too. And it was quite funny because, as you know, I was standing in the cafe. You said you were about to walk in and I turned around and a lady walked in. So I started to engage with her, thinking I was about to interview her and it wasn't you. And she looked quite perplexed.
Poor woman was probably horrified and couldn't get away quickly enough.
I know, she looked mortified.
Oh, and you found a friend.
I did. I found a new friend. So, Sasha, we're here because you have a really, really interesting business and a really interesting business model all around sustainable protein, really, isn't it?
That's correct, yeah.
Seafood and meat. Yeah. So tell us a little bit about how long you've been in Singapore.
So I've been here for nearly 10 years. I was a bit disappointed with the food on offer when I got here. I didn't know where it was from, what was in it. I used to scour the butchers and supermarket shelves looking for information on what I was buying, and there was just nothing. So sort of 2 years into our stay, I started to source food myself, and I started off with some New Zealand lamb.
How did you do that, though? Like, how did you source food yourself? Like, you went online and decided to import lamb, or?
I did it through somebody who was bringing seafood into Singapore. And he was bringing in boxes of lamb and selling them to his friends on the back of his seafood business. So I bought the lamb from him. And then I quickly realized how delicious it was. And it became two boxes and three boxes, and my friends were buying it from me. And before I knew it, there was a little business starting.
It's a little chain.
Yeah.
Chain of salespeople of beautiful New Zealand lamb.
Absolutely. And that's all it was to start with.
Wow.
It was New Zealand lamb for probably 3 months. And then I added some Australian beef. And gradually I built a little website. People started to order online, and I did my deliveries myself every week. In the back of the car with blocks of ice and Eskies. And I hated it, actually, at that point. It was really hard.
You hated the just sorting it all out and delivering
it? I didn't mind. I actually found it quite satisfying packing the orders and ticking things off. But getting in the car and driving all day around the island and dealing with condo security men, and I found that quite soul-destroying. Mm. That was quite a low point, I think, when I did ask myself what on earth I was doing. Mm. But within 6 months, I managed to find a driver, and that was a big step for me to bring somebody in and take the deliveries away so I could start sourcing some more products.
Wow. And where do you start sourcing? Like, are you dealing with people who are already bringing stuff in and you're piggybacking on them? Or are you, I mean, how, I wouldn't even know where to start. Like, you ring Australia. How do
Yeah, no, good question. I mean, it's a bit of a chicken and egg. I was not big enough to bring it in myself, to import it from directly. But I didn't really want to buy it from people already in Singapore because it meant it was already available. And I was trying to do something different. So what I ended up doing was connecting with a couple of very high-end food suppliers here who only cater to the top restaurants and hotels. And you can't buy their products on the supermarket shelves. And I persuaded them to take me on as a wholesale customer. And that's how I started with the beef. I bought it through a third party in Singapore. Mm. And I built up a network of suppliers in Singapore probably for the first two to three years. That's what I was doing until I got to a point when I could start to import directly from the farmers.
And at that point, when you were working on building those relationships with your suppliers here, were you still selling mostly to friends and your own network, or had that sort of started to...
It had started. I mean, it's really, the business has always been word of mouth.
Yeah.
We have done a little bit of marketing over the years, but a business like mine, I don't know why, but it's grown through word of mouth. Mm. I think a lot of expats shop with us, and expats talk. They share information. If they find somewhere they like, they tell their friends. And really, probably for the first year, it was just to friends. And then I saw that it was people's names I didn't know, and that someone had introduced them. And
it's quite a cool feeling,
yeah,
isn't it?
It's a lovely feeling. Yeah. Someone had been to a dinner party and rang me up and said, I had your meat at the weekend, and can I order? And I had a terrible website. It was so clunky, and it kept giving up on me.
It was just the basic build.
So basic. embarrassing, actually, when
That's
I look back.
All right. No, but everyone has. We all have to start somewhere.
Yeah.
I started with a basic, clunky website as well. I mean, that's just what you do.
Yeah. And obviously delivering myself. And it wasn't very sophisticated. I had some warehouse space out at the outskirts of the island. I used to drive out there and rummage through the meat. And
That's what I wondered. So where did you keep all the product?
Yeah, so I had warehouse space.
So like a... storage.
Yeah, a massive... There are these big facilities on the outskirts of Singapore where there's sort of cold rooms and freezer rooms.
Oh,
and
wow.
I rented pallet space within these rooms. Yeah. It's really quite grim. These places are not very... You don't want to hang out there.
No, I'm sure.
But then I would take it back to my... What was an office come packing room that I had rented. And I had a wall of commercial fridges and freezers. And I'd brought somebody on by this stage, and she and I used to pack all the orders every day and then give them to the driver, and off he'd go.
So it became daily delivery?
Yes. It started off once a week,
yes,
then twice a week, and then we went daily, and that really was a turning point because people didn't want to wait. And
wow.
All of a sudden it was 6 days a week, and that was a really big turning point for the business.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
So did you keep the whole business out of home?
Yes. I mean, for the first couple of months, I was sitting at my computer at home, but then I quite quickly got a little office, which I was allowed to use for food storage. The food, I didn't store it all there, but I could bring it in maybe the day it was going to be delivered and put it into my own fridges and freezers in the office space. We would pack there, and then it would go out on the cool truck.
Wow.
Yeah, it was a tiny, tiny space. Literally, we shared a desk. My friend, she became a friend. The girl that worked with me, a lovely girl called Jen. She and I shared a desk, and we tiptoed around each other and packed up all the orders and sent our lovely driver, Ismar, on the road, and he would go and do the deliveries, and then we would start looking at the orders for the next day.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah. That's amazing. And have you ever had issues with supply and demand?
Yes. I mean, we do. That's a challenge, trying to get the right balance of not having too much, but making sure everyone gets what they want. Mm. Generally, with meat and seafood, it has quite a long shelf life, so we can... For example, our fresh salmon from New Zealand, we fly that in every week, has a 10-day shelf life. So we can sell it for 6 days, and then the fresh batch comes in, and we freeze what we haven't sold, and we sell it frozen.
And you sell it frozen?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. Cool.
We sell a lot frozen.
Oh, that's perfect, isn't
it? Yeah. So there are some products that are very tricky, like the cheeses and things, because you can't freeze them. So I actually tend to avoid those sorts of things. I try and work with bring in fresh products, and freeze, and people.
What is not?
People are quite happy to buy frozen now.
I'm quite happy to buy frozen. Yeah.
I mean, particularly with our chicken. So our fresh chicken, which is local, we freeze it on the day we receive it. So we get it every day, and whatever doesn't go out the door that day, we freeze immediately.
So you say the chicken's local. So have you sourced someone here that is doing free range chicken that you're comfortable with?
It's not free range. It's not allowed to be in Singapore.
Why?
Yeah, the AVA, which is the food governing body here, are very nervous about avian flu.
Right.
So they won't allow fresh, free-range chicken in Singapore. The only way you can bring chicken into Singapore is either frozen or alive.
Okay.
So the farm that we work with, which are a fantastic farm, they are over the border in Malaysia.
Right.
And every day the chickens are brought over alive.
Alive.
And the processing facility is here. They get processed in the middle of the night. We get delivery about 5 in the morning, and we deliver to our customers that morning.
So who's collecting the processed chicken at 5 o'clock in the morning?
It gets delivered to our warehouse. Yeah, so the chicken company.
Yes.
Deliver to our warehouse. They have a key.
Oh, they have a key.
Yeah, I've been working with him for 5 years.
Okay, so you don't have to be there at 5.
No, thankfully, otherwise the warehouse staff would actually kill me, because they do have to be there at 7:30, and I think that's early enough.
Oh, that is hilarious. Yeah, that is hilarious, because I'm imagining, you're a mum, yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm a mum with 3 kids.
Yeah. How many kids?
3 kids.
3.
Yeah.
And I can just imagine that, like, you've zoomed out to collect your chicken at your warehouse, plonked that on the shelves, got back in the car, zoomed back, get your kids their breakfast.
Thankfully, I am so lucky enough now to have a team that helped me out. And, yeah, it's an early, because it's food, we're out early on the road.
Of course,
as soon as we can be every morning. But it works really well. It's hard work. There's a team of, there's 13 of us now.
That's amazing, Sasha.
Oh, wow.
13 people.
Yeah.
And it just started with you selling some lamb to your friends. That's amazing.
Yeah, it's great. I mean, I enjoy it because I love food, and I love learning about the provenance of food and how it's been produced, where it's come from and what's in it. So for me, it's a real passion.
And where did that come from? Like, what, because there's plenty of people that love food but don't necessarily think about the provenance or worry about what's in it, and then you've got others who are so obsessed that they almost can't eat.
Yeah. I'm definitely not like that, by the
way.
No,
which you're clearly not like that.
No.
But so what is it? Yeah, what was it, do you think, in your background, where did it come from for you that you did start to become concerned about?
I think in our family.
Or aware.
Yeah,
aware.
In our family, I'm from the northeast of England, where we're surrounded by farms. We've always been very conscious of what we've been eating. And when I moved to London, every weekend without fail, I went to the local farmer's market. And that is actually just because I love food.
Mm.
And I would talk to the farmers, because that's where you get to meet them. And they would tell me about, you know, how they did it versus how their neighbor did it. And I started to learn about all of the dreadful things that went on, but also all of, you know, meet these people that really cared about what they were doing. They cared about how they produced the food, the environment around them, the animals, how it reached its destination, and all of those things started to become important to me. Mm. And, you know, in London 10 years ago, that was normal to be able to get that information at a farmer's market. And we moved to Singapore, and there was nobody could tell me anything. The butchers couldn't tell me. They could tell me beef was from Australia. They couldn't even tell me what state it was from, let alone whether there were hormones in the meat. or anything about the farms or anything. And I found that really hard.
What do you think in Singapore about the wet markets, you know, for the locals? Do you think they are getting that information, or do you think that the locals are shopping and those suppliers at the markets here? I mean, because we can't speak their language.
No.
So do you think they are getting that sort of same feedback that we would get in our countries at farmers' markets, or do you think it's...
I don't think so.
No,
because I don't think... I mean, this is a big sweeping statement, but I think a lot of people in Singapore, particularly the generation that shop in the wet markets, they have never been exposed to farms and sourcing, and they just go to the wet market and buy their chicken and their fish, and they probably don't ask any questions. You know, the fish comes down from Malaysia, the chicken comes from somewhere in Malaysia probably, and that's good enough for them.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a generalization. Of course, there'll be people that ask questions, but I've certainly never had any questions answered in wet markets, and I've tried.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, people can tell me where the fish has come from Malaysia, but they can't tell me where in Malaysia.
Yeah. Or how it's farmed.
Or how it's been farmed, or even if it was wildly caught. They don't know.
Mm.
So that's my own experience. And I think there's a market that we'll never sell to here. You know, the people that shop in the wet markets, and they're not, I guess, the people that are going to come to my company.
No, I mean, there are people that need or only want to shop because of price.
Yeah,
you
absolutely.
Know, and they don't.
Absolutely.
Maybe they're in a position that they can't care, you know, too much because that's where they're at. Or maybe they just don't care, you know? It's like, I just want to buy the cheapest I can possibly buy. And
that's fine.
Yeah, but they're not your customer.
No. But there's enough people here. Obviously, there's a lot of expats.
Yes.
But what we're finding is a lot of the younger Singaporeans that have travelled, they're starting to come to us.
Oh, that's brilliant.
Which is amazing. It's amazing.
How fantastic.
Yeah. So the feedback we get from our drivers now... it's really important. Every week I hear about the new customers and who they are, where they've come from, how they've found out about us. And we get at least, I would say, 20% of the new customers now are
Chinese.
Local Singaporean who they've traveled. They know a little bit about food safety. They've read some scary stories. And that for me, that's music to my ears because we're starting to spread the word.
Are there any farms in Singapore? There's not really any production
not,
here,
not
is
animal,
there?
No. I mean, there are some vegetable farms, and I know the AVA at the moment are putting some land up for bids for farmers, but it's going to be vegetables and herbs and fruit.
Yeah.
There's no animal farming here.
Well, there's not really any space, is there?
There's not the space, and the climate would be quite challenging for most animals to live in outdoors.
Mm.
There's some really pioneering... what's it called? It's indoor farming. We work with a fantastic company that basically builds... They grow kale indoors in test tubes.
Wow.
And it's the most incredible.
Wow.
It's called a vertical farm.
Yeah.
It's a very tall building. And these guys, you know, they don't use any soil. It's the most natural product. There's no chemicals or anything because they don't need anything. It's a very sterile environment. And they grow the most delicious kale,
which we sell.
Insane. Yeah. So people are starting to try and think, you know, outside the box, what can they do with the space that they have here?
Which in itself is quite impressive.
Because
poor Singapore don't think outside the box too much. Sorry, Singapore.
They don't. No, you said it, not me.
I said it. I'll take that.
Yeah. You know, some people are trying, which is great.
Yeah, that's amazing.
But I don't see, I mean, that's when you live on an island like this, everything's imported.
Yeah, wow.
And there's a lot of stuff that comes in that's not very nice, that I wouldn't eat. And there's a lot of great product that comes in.
Mm.
So for me, it's about finding the great farms out there that are interested in getting their product overseas and that can cope with that. But at the same time, I don't tend to deal with the really big corporates because it doesn't really... That's not what I'm about.
No.
I love the relationship with the farmers and supporting family farms and small businesses.
Amazing.
Like myself, I guess.
So what are you bringing in from New Zealand for our New Zealand listeners? They'll be all excited.
So the lamb, obviously, that's still an absolute hit. The other number one bestseller is the salmon.
Salmon.
So it's Mount Cook Alpine Salmon.
Mm-hmm.
Have you tried it?
No.
You have to try it when you go home.
Okay, I will.
It is the most...
Beautiful salmon.
Beautiful salmon in the world. It's very different because it's raised in alpine water, so it's fresh water.
Yeah.
You can drink the water that the salmon swim in.
Wow.
And it makes for a very different experience when you eat the salmon. It's very mild, sort of minerally almost.
Mm-hmm.
It's beautiful. It's our number one seller.
Wow, that's
amazing.
Yeah,
we sell about a ton a month of salmon, New Zealand salmon.
Wow.
Yeah, so it's sashimi grade. People, lots the savvy customers order it for delivery on a Thursday because it's just landed that morning, and they can cut it straight up into sashimi.
Yum.
Yeah, beautiful.
Amazing.
So, what else from Australia? Eggs. So I got my
New
eggs.
Zealand.
Yep.
Yep.
Oh, sorry.
That's all right.
It's because you're Australian. Sorry. I'm going down the wrong route. Yeah, my eggs are from New Zealand.
Okay.
Yeah, so from a small town outside Wellington. A really beautiful little egg farm, which probably sounds very random because it's really in the middle of nowhere. Why would I go to them? They're one of the few places that Singapore will allow us to import eggs from. They've been approved by the ABA here. They won't allow free-range eggs here.
Oh, so they won't.
Can't,
okay.
You can't, just like the chicken, you can't buy free-range eggs in Singapore.
Wow.
Yeah, which is...
And yet now, in Countdown in New Zealand, you can only buy free-range.
Wow.
They've canned the
How
others
amazing.
Completely.
How amazing. That's music to my ears.
Yeah.
But sadly, that's a frustration here.
Yeah.
Everyone wants free-range eggs. But this is the next best thing,
which
is sort of... great big barns, like football pitches almost, that have sides on them so that they're not considered free range, but they are not caged.
Okay.
They're fed very well. They have I've been down, I've seen it. It's a great little company.
Oh, you have been there? Yeah, I was going to ask that. Okay,
yeah, I've been,
fantastic.
I met the owner who I think was a rock star in his previous life. He looks like Bon Jovi.
Of course.
And he's an egg farmer.
I love
Brilliant.
It. Yeah. I love it.
Yeah.
Actually, New Zealand are doing amazing stuff with eggs. I don't know if you know, it's a big brand, Woodland Eggs, but they're now stamping the eggs. So when you get the eggs, they will have a little red stamp on them that gives the provenance. So you then go online to the Woodlands website and type in the little the number, and it will tell you which farm, and it shows you a picture of the farm
that's
which is
so
just
lovely.
So cool. So the kids, so now the kids, when they open it, go, oh, I wonder where my eggs come from, and they can actually see.
That's fantastic.
I mean, it's quirky, but it's what it's reminding you is do care about it.
Yeah.
Like whether you bother to go and look it up, whether you realise most of your eggs are coming from the same farm once you've bought Woodlands for a while, it doesn't matter.
No, it doesn't matter.
They're
I
trying
think
to say this is important.
Yeah, I think that's
us.
Brilliant.
Yeah, it's
and
cool,
that will catch on, I'm sure.
Yeah,
it won't
really
catch
cool.
on here because of the restrictions, but I wish I could shop like that because I actually am the sad person that would look up the code.
I did too.
And then I'd look
cool.
at the farm and I'd see the photos, and I think that brings
cool.
it kind of makes it all real, right?
Yeah.
Particularly for children.
I think it's really good for educating because the problem is they just think it comes from the supermarket.
Yeah. Well, my kids don't anymore because I have taken my kids around pig farms and chicken farms, and they are definitely learning about what's important.
And do they eat everything? Do they love their food?
They do eat everything. They're not, some of them are fussy. They don't eat my salmon, which breaks my heart because it's
they
the
don't
nicest
eat salmon.
Salmon. No,
why? I wonder.
They just don't like salmon, which is very annoying.
I have one that does and one that doesn't.
Right.
One who would choose it all the time, and one when I cook it, I know how I need to cook it for him to eat it.
Okay,
and
at least he'll eat
it. I think it's just too. Too rich and too strong, so he's never going to have like a big slab of salmon.
No,
but if I cook it and then sort of flake it through something else, then he's happy to have it.
You might need to give me that recipe, and I'll try and get my 15-year-old to taste salmon.
Yeah, that is my 15-year-old as well. My younger one's fine.
Yeah, okay.
And I've also explained that how healthy salmon is, and that it's important to eat it occasionally for. You know, for your brain, blah, blah, blah. And so the younger one kind of cottons onto that. So he's sort of almost, well, I must love it because it should be good to love.
Well, how great is that, though?
And the 15/16-year-old's
yeah,
just like...
couldn't care. Couldn't
I don't care.
Care. Yeah.
Don't
oh,
really
so you
care.
Have a 15-year-old daughter as well.
Oh, yes,
yeah,
the son.
Oh,
I have the 15-year-old.
Okay.
Yes, he's just turned 16.
Right, okay.
Yes, that's a whole nother discussion.
Yeah, let's not go there.
let's not go there. Bless you, Christopher.
Yeah, we love you, really.
Yes. So you are obviously totally into your food.
I am.
But you said before we jumped on air that you don't think you're a good cook.
I don't think I'm a good cook, and that's because I can only follow a recipe. I'm not one of those people that can just open the cupboard doors and go, all right, what shall we pull out today? Let's throw something together. It's going to be delicious. I don't have that creativity. And so I think I can follow a recipe, and it tastes great when I do. But anyone can follow a recipe.
Well, no, they can't. So
okay.
I think you probably are a good cook. But I think that whole ability to be able to open a door or a fridge of something and be able to just cook from it, I reckon prior to MasterChef, if you'd asked me whether I could do that, I probably could have, but I didn't do it.
Okay.
I would tend to follow recipes. And then I had that whole MasterChef experience where you've got no recipe, so you're forced to do it.
Yeah.
Now, I will tend to use a recipe book for inspiration, but I'll just cook.
Really?
Very different pre and post being forced to think out like that. And I think, you know, you probably could do it if you were put in that position, but you've got recipes and you're following them and you're happy.
Yeah, but for you to have done so well on MasterChef, you obviously had skills to put food together for it to taste great. I genuinely don't feel like
you do.
But I love cooking. I mean, I don't cook very much here because we have a home help, which is lovely, and obviously I'm working full time, but we have a place down in Margaret River.
Oh, do you?
Yeah, and that's what I do when I'm there. I cook
gorgeous.
All the time. Like that's my, you know, I have an hour to myself every day of just cooking something new up, usually a Donaghy recipe.
Yes, perfect.
And I love that.
Yeah.
Yeah, for me it's very relaxing and really rewarding. And my son, who's 12, he loves cooking as well, so it tends to be the two of us that do the
perfect.
Cooking. Yeah, so that's a real joy for me. I think when I'm on holiday and I'm relaxed, I love it. But practical cooking, kind of on a Monday night when everyone's hungry and I'm tired, I'm happy to hand that over to the helper. I'm very lucky I can hand that over to the helper. Very lucky.
I mean, I used to hand over all the prep.
Yep.
That's what I missed so much and still miss.
Of course, because you were in Asia as well.
I was in Asia as well and had helpers. Yep. And they would do the shopping and prep, you know, just get all the stuff washed and prepped and into the fridge. So then all I had to do was just pull it out and create or
together.
Put together.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. And I miss that because now I do more cooking than ever.
Of course you do.
And I have no one to help. I'm like, all those years. And I never appreciated someone was always behind me washing up or, you know, can I wash that for you? And I'm like, oh, if only I had that extra pair of hands now.
I must admit, for dinner parties, that's what I do. All
it's
the prep.
Perfect,
my lovely
it?
Helper Jelly does all the chopping up, and then I might sort of show my
pop
face and pop it together and go ta da and take
it's
all the credit.
Awesome, isn't it?
Very lucky.
So, are you going to stay in Singapore?
Yeah, that's the plan.
Yeah,
we've been here nearly 10 years, as I say. We have no plans to move. The kids. We have two children who were born in England, and our youngest daughter is Singaporean. We adopted her when she was 2.
Oh, wow.
So she's 8 now. And so, you know, Singapore is very much in
home.
Our, you know, it's very much in our family. You
yes.
know, we have a massive connection to the place. Obviously, I've got the business, but we have Layla, and it's home.
Wow.
It's home. Yeah, you know, we still miss London, and we go back most years to say hi to our friends and family, but Singapore's it's a great place to live.
It is a great place, isn't it?
Yeah, it's very easy. The food is challenging. That's I guess my one big gripe.
What about eating out though here?
Yeah, eating out. Yeah, there are some great places to eat out.
And does it bother you? Like, will you go and eat in food courts and things? Or not really?
I will go to them, but I don't tend to eat the meat. I don't tend to eat in them. I'll go to them with friends or family. I'm struggling because I generally don't eat the food there.
Yeah, no, that's all right.
Just because I don't.
That's
I don't
what I'm
know.
Asking.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I might have some sushi. I might have some. Yeah, that's probably as far as I would go. Maybe some wonton soup, but I don't know.
It's not really your thing.
No, but the kids love eating in those places, and that's fine. I'm not going to stop them.
You don't restrict your kids?
No, not at all.
No.
I mean, I think I actually worry about the kids. Being fussy because of the way they've been lucky enough to have this amazing food at home because of my business. And I worry that they're going to be snobby about food, and I absolutely don't want that. You know, I don't want them going to friends' houses and saying,
I can't eat that
because I don't know what's in it. I mean, that's horrifying for me. So I think, whilst I hope that they take it into their adulthood and make good choices as they get older, I think, you know, their kids, and if they want to go to McDonald's, I'm not going to say to them, you can't go to McDonald's.
Yeah.
And as we both know, as we have nearly 16-year-olds, they're going to go to McDonald's anyway if they want to.
Oh, totally. So. And that's exactly right. And I've had parents of younger kids saying to me, you know, that they're very restrictive and that they don't understand why I'm not so sort of pro trying to show kids they should absolutely not have, you know, sugar and they should absolutely not have junk food. And I said, because I now have teenagers. So I've been through all of that and I've seen what happens. And right now, I'm just happy if my son eats.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
I'm hoping he's going to eat. I'm far more worried about a whole host of other things, you know.
Yeah.
I've got to worry about drugs, alcohol, smoking, whether he's actually in his room when he says he's in his room. The last thing I'm worried about is what he is actually eating.
Yeah.
And in general, we've been the same as you. You know, we've tried really hard to produce beautiful home-cooked food at home. That's what they love. They're really fantastic kids in that they'll eat absolutely anything,
brilliant.
Which is brilliant. So tick the box, really blessed. And, yeah, there might be a couple of years now that I just have to go, oh, my goodness, I hope he comes out the other side.
Yeah.
And I'm sure he will. And I'm sure your kids will have those little phases and come out the other side and remember as well.
Yeah, yeah,
you know?
I think you're right.
And I think, you know, if you can get it right, I don't know what the percentage is, but if you can create at home what you want,
yeah.
they'll make other choices elsewhere. And if you start restricting them, they're going to go and do it anyway.
You're so right. And I think when you have toddlers, you know, you're quite precious about all of that.
You
and
are.
You can control
okay.
it. And yeah, absolutely. And you can control it. And it's lovely. And why would you not do that if you if you're lucky enough to be able to do that? But yeah, I'm quite relaxed growing up.
Yeah, I'm quite relaxed about it as
yeah.
well. And also, the other thing that really bothers me around the restrictive, which I say all the time, is what about travel? You know, there's a couple of things that bothers me about their very restrictive diets that people are putting their kids on.
Yeah.
Because if you want to go and travel, you can't necessarily... What are you going to do? Take a suitcase full of packaged... I don't want to say the word, but whatever diet you're following,
yeah.
you know,
yeah.
you're going to take the packaged goods that reflect that dietary choice when you go overseas, you're actually missing out on travel.
Yeah.
Because so much of travel is about eating.
Absolutely, and it restricts where you can eat and how you can choose your on your menu. And
I know,
I mean, we have
such
friends
a pity.
Who are like that, and it's very hard to dine out with them.
Yeah, it's frustrating,
yeah,
isn't it?
It
yeah,
it is, and I feel for them. But at the same time, they sort of say it's been so long now, let's say gluten. Somebody who's gluten intolerant, it's been so long since she had gluten. If she has it now,
she does
she's much
sick.
Worse than she was before she gave it up, if that makes
Isn't
sense.
Isn't that interesting?
Yeah.
Yeah,
yeah.
Such
so
a pity.
We don't tend to follow any diets in our house. Luckily, there's no intolerances in our family.
Look, and me too.
And
oh,
so
totally me too.
Yeah.
yeah.
But,
very lucky.
But I also am a real believer in not talking about dieting and restrictions on what you know what you can eat, because I just want the kids to be really healthy in the way they view food.
Me too.
I want them to really enjoy it, which is what I do, and that's why I'm doing what I do.
Yeah,
you know,
that's amazing, Sasha.
Well, you know, it's hard work, but I wouldn't be doing it if I didn't absolutely love. And for me, you know, we bring in a new product and I see it sell, and friends ring me and say we had so and so at dinner and they rave about it, and that is just the most
heartwarming
feeling. Yeah, it's amazing, and I feel really lucky now that I can do that.
So what are all your products on your website?
They're all on the website. We don't have a shop. We are purely online home delivery. I travel quite a lot because I'm always meeting the farmers before I will source from them.
Right.
So I'm about to go back to Scotland actually for a really exciting trip for some new seafood, hopefully. And then down to Melbourne for a food event in a few weeks' time.
Oh, lucky you. I've just been to Melbourne.
I love Melbourne.
My favourite
yes.
food city.
Yeah, yeah, mine too.
Oh, it's amazing,
yeah.
isn't it?
I'm gonna when I'm born again, I'm coming to Melbourne. That's where
yeah,
I'm going
to
be born.
Yeah, totally. I'm intending to do it before I'm born again.
Oh, are you? Okay.
Oh, totally. Oh,
yeah.
totally.
The best coffee
Melbourne
in the world.
Melbourne is absolutely on my life
yeah.
agenda.
Yeah.
I went to uni there and grew up there. Yeah, I love it. I
saw
totally
you've done
it.
Something on the market there. Is it Paran? I don't know how
oh,
to say it.
Oh, Paran Market.
Yeah, that's one of my favourite places.
Isn't that brilliant?
Yeah.
Yeah,
beautiful.
I met the cheesemaker.
Yeah,
I don't think
I met the cheesemaker.
Oh, you've got to... Oh,
I've got to go back.
Well, now that you're on my podcast, you should listen to a couple of episodes previous to this one, where it is actually an interview I did with Anthony, and
right.
he's called Maker and Munger.
Okay.
And they're in Paran Market, and he's world famous for cheese.
Oh, wow.
And he's in Paran Market.
Okay,
and
well, I shall be visiting him.
Unbelievable. You definitely need to visit him. I'll give you his details, and he was amazing.
I saw you were talking to some Turkish Delight
Yes, and
company.
Right next to him
is
the lady. Yeah, so she, Nahida, and her husband do all homemade Turkish Delight.
I heard you talking about it.
In
it
Melbourne. They
insane.
Have a factory in Melbourne, and they were very similar to you. They started actually with dips. So their story was that he got to Melbourne, didn't have a job. They started just making dips, selling to friends, and then
the dip range extended, wow. and they've got no preservatives, no flavourings, nothing. They're all made fresh, gorgeous. Completely by them.
Gorgeous.
Then they started on Turkish Delight, and they've got a guy that makes it the old way in the copper pot, and it's literally wow. standing there stirring.
Wow.
Unbelievable couple. And they're at Paran Market. They've got two outlets.
Well, I'm going to go and see them.
Definitely.
Based
You'll
on your
love
podcast,
them.
I'm going to go and see them, because my favourite coffee in the whole wide world is from a tiny little coffee shop in Paran Market.
In Paran Market. Yep. That's where I was having my coffee every morning as well, because I stayed just down the road.
Oh, wow.
So I literally lived in that market.
Oh, I would, yeah, I would go to that market just for that coffee.
Well, there you
I
go.
I thought it was sensational. So I will be there. In about a month's time.
Oh my gosh, I'm so jealous. So who are you seeing in Melbourne?
Well, it's a food event, so I'm going to be connected with some potential suppliers
oh,
down
cool.
there. I'll probably whittle it down to three or four, and I'll go and spend some time on their farms. It's a sort of networking as well within the food industry.
Sure.
And a few days just to see what's out there. And there's a lot of great produce in Victoria, as you will know.
Oh, there, yeah, totally.
So it's I'm constantly looking for what else I can add to the range. What else can I bring to Singapore?
And it's Sasha's Fine Foods.
Sasha's Fine Foods.
So it's not exclusively meat and seafood, is it?
It's not anymore. It was. It was initially meat, then seafood was added. Now we have a whole host of sort of gourmet products, you know, olive oils from Margaret River, olives and burrata from Italy and Parma ham and some beautiful little additions. But really, we are primarily meat and seafood.
Okay.
Yeah, but I'm constantly looking for more.
Yeah, it's amazing. Yeah, so what is your website?
It's sashasfinefoods.com.
Perfect. So easy for listeners to find you.
Yeah,
so
absolutely.
So if people are listening in Singapore,
yeah.
you are the lady for beautiful produce.
I am indeed. Please, please come and visit our website. We'd love to send you some food.
Awesome.
Sure.
Thank you so much for the interview.
That's a pleasure, Ness. Lovely to meet you.
Yeah, you too.
Thank you. Bye. Ooh, what's good?
Ooh, 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 ooh. The Fearless Kitchen Podcast.
Thanks for joining me again on this episode, proudly brought to you by worldpodcast.com and of course me, Vanessa Baxter from The Fearless Kitchen. Don't forget, my awesome cookbook is now available and you can buy it online from www.thefearlesskitchen.co.nz. Yes, world postage is a pain and a nightmare, but hey, I am working out ways to be able to get this book to you no matter where you are in the world. So we will have success with that. Of course, if you're in New Zealand, super easy, straight into the post, beautifully signed by me and straight delivered to your door. It'll also make an awesome Christmas present. So don't forget to jump online, check it out. It's really helpful for me, obviously, if you do buy my book, but it's a win-win, guys, because it's a beautiful book full of over 85 recipes, all really simple and easy, but with fresh inspiration. And of course, lush pictures, which will entice you to cook from scratch every day. Thanks again. Bye for now.